The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
I got one thing to read before we bring on our guest here. I got two cats at home. You know, I like to take care of them. So Pets Life, a company that we've been partnered with, is a Minnesota pet care company that has created an oral care product for your cat or dog that is 100% natural, 100% safe, and 100% guaranteed to improve, your pet's oral health. Save hundreds in vet bills and improve your pet's health by visiting PetsLife.com. That's PetsLife.com. Enter the promo code OMAHA, as in the second part of Cold Omaha, and save 20% on every online order. Or mention OMAHA for 20% off any phone order. That's PetsLife.com, spelled with a Z. PetsLife.com. Back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network, and Cold Omaha is on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me at Brandon_Warren. And again, I am joined, as always, by my producer and co-host, Tom Schreier. He's on Twitter at TSchreier3. Tom, how's it going?
Pretty exciting. Some fun deals to talk about, at least.
Yeah, lots to talk about. Beyond the deals, there was also a very good game last night. We'll maybe get into that a little bit. Got kind of an action-packed show. We will be momentarily welcoming in the Pioneer Press's Mike Berardino, who is on the road in Cleveland covering a team that hit three home runs off the bat of one player, a couple triples from another, and a pretty impressive start from a youngster as well. We'll talk a little bit about that. Once we let Mike go, Tom, you and I will break down yesterday's press conference with Rob Antony. Obviously a very, very active trade deadline for the Twins, first in quite some time, I might add, and maybe chat a little bit about, you know, what Rob had to say yesterday. I guess he had kind of a limited media session at Target Field. So got all that to break down here for you in the next 50 minutes and change. Without any further ado, let's bring in Mike from the road. Mike, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. What's going on, guys?
Not too much.
Yeah, very, very excited to see how the Twins played last night. As far as Kepler is concerned, I mean, is there anything this guy can't do on the baseball field, Mike?
Well, it doesn't look like it lately, because the big question on him was the arm, and he's got six assists because they keep challenging him, and he keeps uncorking very accurate throws and stronger throws than we had seen, certainly in the spring and even in the past, fall league, et cetera. He's on a roll. His confidence grows by the day. He's a smart guy, as we know, and he's figuring things out quickly, processing information, making sure that what I've liked is even in games where he's maybe had three bad at bats, he ends up coming up with the game on the line and he does something good. And so he's able to really limit his moments of frustration.
A couple triples off the bat of Jorge Polanco. How are they going to keep him in the order here moving forward?
I think you're going to see more of that bounce around aspect to it. I don't think he'll get locked into any one position, probably because his best position is taken already by Brian Dozier.
Right.
But I do think that they can move him around. They have not used him in the outfield at all. He was taking fly balls down in AAA, but had not seen any outfield action. That's not the plan, but I think, yeah, between spotting him in at third, as long as Sano's having these defensive woes especially, mm-hmm. although Plouffe will be back soon, it's going to be a challenge, but the bat will play, and, I thought even he's been up a handful of times previously, but this last time that he was up and had to be sent right back out, his pitches seen were so high and just the patience that he was showing and you could just tell he was far more polished as a hitter than the resume would indicate the major league time, and now you're getting to see I really could see him. Giving them a lot to think about in the final 2 months.
And Polanco told reporters, I don't remember if you were in the scrum or not, that he's taken balls at short as well in practice down at AAA. In your estimation, is he more likely to get a start in shortstop or in the outfield first in the big leagues if you had to choose?
Well, it'll be shortstop just because he's done it. Outfield would be more of a project. And I think just there's enough spots for him. Plus, they can DH him too. So you really have four options as you try to give people a break here or there. And Escobar's had an injury-riddled season so far, and there's nothing that says that he'll be able to play every day the rest of the way. He's going to need some breaks. Polanco, Molitor's, I think you're in there, Brandon, when Molitor's talking about Polanco's arm strength and how he uncorked some throws this spring even that caught his eye. That was interesting because what I remember about Polanco's spring is that he was bouncing a lot of throws and that he seemed to have a throwing thing going on even at second this spring. He seemed to lose some confidence with his throws. That's going to be the thing with him. I think the range is okay. I was surprised to and of course Molitor would know, but Molitor's not sold on his range at short. I think he can get to the ball. I just don't think he can make the throw from deep short or up the middle even that needs to be made by an average to above average major league shortstop. But, hey, David Eckstein won a World Series, and he had to do about three crow hops before every throw from shortstop with the Angels. And there have been some other guys who were short, you know, no pun intended, with the arm, and were able to stay at shortstop, at least in a utility manner.
What was your level of being impressed with Jose Berríos last night, especially how he adjusted after a bit of a bumpy first inning and then kind of went into cruise control? It helps, I think, for a youngster like that to have your offense kind of give you that kind of a boost. But at the same time, he's still got to go out there and make those pitches. Did he show you anything last night?
Oh, sure. It did get overshadowed by the offense and by Kepler in particular, but that was good. It took the spotlight off him. You could almost feel that happening as really with Eddie Rosario's tying homer that made it 3-3. That took pressure off Rios because Molitor went up to him right after that and said, okay, new game, let's go back to work, and he did. Although what's kind of encouraging, actually, is that he was that dominant and set down that many people in a row, and yet Molitor thought his changeup was only fair and his breaking ball was only okay. So he was really just spotting the fastball and blowing the fastball by people at up to 97 at times. He was amped up, but he was usable amped last night as opposed to what we've seen in the prior stint.
One quick thing before we get to this trade deadline talk that I think is pretty pressing. Do you get the sense that they're transitioning Mauer into a spot where he gets more days off, maybe 2 days off per week or something? You know, you've seen more of Vargas at first, but I guess it's a two-layer question. Do you see Mauer transitioning to a little bit less of a full-time role? And have you been impressed with Vargas's work at first? Because I feel like he's come a long way there.
Well, I mean, it's been all year that Mauer's been spotted more frequently, given more time off, certainly more DH time. Mauer quietly had a nice game last night, and to homer off an Andrew Miller slider, debut or not, that's a bulletin. Mm-hmm. And to pull it was quite something. But and he pulled the ball with authority, a fastball the last time up. So, yeah, Mauer showed some signs of life there last night. Always hit well against Cleveland and at Cleveland, I believe. But yeah, sure. I mean, they have these options, and Byung-ho Park will be back here at some point. Mm-hmm. Might take till September. Doesn't necessarily have to. Plouffe will be back here very soon, and as they try to figure out how to maneuver the waiver wire for him in August, they're probably going to maneuver the waiver wire for Kurt Suzuki in August and see who claims him and if they can work something out. Yeah, an overabundance of options for Molitor for a team that quietly is playing .500 ball over its last 60 games, 30-30 since that 11-34 start. If they had started 30-30, I think things would be quite different, and Terry Ryan would still be in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I lied. I got one more question. You start thinking about Trevor Plouffe coming back here. I believe he's playing tonight for the first time for Rochester. They got a 3-game set. They had yesterday off. So he headed over there, I believe, yesterday, but is not going to get into a game until today. They have a 3-game home series before they hit the road for a week. So my gut says the Twins will probably want to bring him back before Rochester heads out on the road. In your opinion, I mean, are they going to send Polanco back again? Because, honestly, they're getting a little bit backed up here.
Boy, I'm not sure. As Terry would always say, those things take care of themselves.
Usually
I'm not
they
sure,
do.
And they usually do. But more so than Polanco, now that you mention it, and Plouf does expect to join the team in Tampa on Friday. I think that's plan A.
Yep.
Like, as he walked out on Sunday, he said, see you in Tampa. But Miguel Sano is at risk of a demotion here.
Boy, I could see it. Even for just a month, you know, with Park being sent down, you know, they gave him a month to really blow up, and I think the situation around that might have been, let's see what happens with Plouf. If he gets traded, you got a spot for Park to come up. Not necessarily, obviously, Park to play third, because that wouldn't happen, but to get some things maneuvered for a little more roster clarity, maybe a month down there would clear his head, and he really has played poorly. That's an interesting thought.
Yes, it got lost in the shuffle. I wrote it, but it was about the third note on a day that Buxton's MRI came in, and you had all the trade comings and goings, and people who weren't traded, like Kinsler, had to talk about it. But within all of that, Molitor left it open-ended on how long he's going to do this sort of a daily decision on Sano's usage. He has sat now 3 out of 4 games, and they are working on things with him. And the problem here is it's not just one side of the ball.
Yeah.
It's offense and defense, and you can see Sano's confidence has plummeted. And when you make 11 errors in 19 games at third base, and you do have a history of a 40-error season at third base down in Cedar Rapids, you know, you can see where it piles up on him. And now the strikeouts are just piling up. And again, Miguel Sano's going to strike out. He's always done that.
Mm-hmm.
The strikeout rate is actually lower this year than it was last year, but as I noted on Twitter a few days ago, it gets spotlighted more, and people are harping on it because his walk rate is down, and his BABIP is down about 50 points, which was predictable because he's not going to get many leg hits. But when a manager who has always been supportive and had your back, and not ripping him, but when a manager can't commit to how long this sort of maybe situation will go on day to day, whether Snow's in the lineup or not, and as you said, I'm sure he's not overjoyed when he comes in and sees his name is not in the lineup. Well, the only way you get through these things generally is to get back to playing. And if they are overbooked and Polanco is doing these things and Plouf needs to have a couple weeks to rebuild value before they, again, game the waiver wire, because there is strategy to when you try to put somebody out there. I guess I absolutely could see that.
Do you think they should have dealt Vargas, or that they will in the offseason, just given like a logjam at first and potentially Sano being a DH or spending more time there?
I think they were very much open to that, and I think there was interest. Scouts would ask me about Vargas in the last couple of weeks, and there are teams, even contending teams, that were intrigued. Obviously, they didn't have position flexibility, but an AL team especially could have perhaps found a way to use him as he's rebuilt his value. And you mentioned his defense. I want to talk about his base running. I want to talk about Kenny. He went first to third last night.
Oh, my.
The old Kenny Vargas, and it was close. He had the hustle.
Yeah.
And he scored now multiple times. He's been out at home at Fenway. He had a lot of adventures at home plate at Fenway that resulted in replay review and such. And he overslid the home once. He on a very acrobatic play, and then the next time he nailed it. He looks in better shape than we've seen in quite a while, even better than 14 maybe. This might be the most agile he's been, and that's why you're noticing better range at first, and he's going after more balls. But it's the base running. You know, he's always been kind of he seems like a guy who thinks of himself as a better base runner than anybody else ever has. And he wants those extra 90 feet, and now he seems to be able to get them. So if he's not just a carnival act, and he's not just a guy who's up there to bash and then trot around the bases like Big Poppy is now, then he gives you something to think about. But I'm not so sure that they wouldn't take, obviously they're going to take Vargas into the offseason now. You're not going to trade him off the waiver situation, I don't believe. Could, but I don't think so. I think that this opens up the possibility that Park could be dangled
sure.
in the off season, because they'll have some choices there.
Yeah, I think we're at peak Kenny right now, and I wrote for coldomaha.com here over the weekend. A lot of his underlying numbers have been really good as far as swinging at pitches out of the zone, making contact, frankly, and he's been swinging less. Sometimes less is more for guys like him, and so far so good. Obviously a small sample size, but we'll see how it pans out here the rest of the way. Well, we did want to get to trades, and there were three, at least that I counted. Maybe I missed them, but I highly doubt that. The first one that came down, and Mike, I wasn't covering that night. I believe Tom was, so I don't know if you were covering, Mike, but... Eduardo Nunez getting flipped to the Giants for a left-handed starter, Adalberto Mejia. What was your initial takeaway from that trade?
Seems like a fair deal. I was a little surprised that Nunez was dealt, but when you step back and think about it, if you're going to set the bar at try to, as I've said and we've said on the show, you got to try to find opportunities to trade people at peak value, at perceived peak, especially if you have alternatives to them. Well, Eduardo Nunez is not going to be an all-star again, probably, in his career. Eduardo Nunez had a very hard time hitting like this for a sustained period in his career, and he was going to be 1 year away from free agency and was going to be looking at quite a raise in arbitration this winter, probably doubling or even more on his salary, so he might be $3 to $4 million player next year. And if he regresses, as you would have to think he will somewhat, you could end up having a $3 to $4 million bench player again as the Twins. So it was the right time. As much as we all love Mooney and as much energy as he brings and as much mentorship as he could provide, even to someone like Sano, I have to believe that it was painful for guys like Danny Santana and Miguel Sano to see Nunez walk out that mm-hmm. door. Now, Mejia, I don't know enough about his conditioning.
Right.
Concerned about his conditioning to know if the Giants don't make many bad deals, let's face it. And they immediately popped Nunez in there at the leadoff the last couple of days.
Yeah, I saw that.
So... I think he's going to be useful to them, and you know. But Mejia is a guy who's consistently been one of their top 10 prospects, trending a little bit downward. Obviously, got popped with a suspension last year at the start for a stimulant that was considered to be a weight loss thing. Well, Kenny Vargas has had his own problems with the stimulants in the past. Weight loss, people struggle with weight. Well, the Twins have another one of those guys that they're going to have to stay on. He is a big guy. He is a big-bodied guy,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes those guys can pitch fat for a while, but a young guy like that, it's a concern.
And with Nunez, too, it looks like he's going to be penciled in at third base now for the duration, with Duffy being traded to the Rays. Does it surprise you that they are going to slot him in as a regular when initially you thought it might be a utility role, or is... You know, this is just kind of a good fit. You know, the Giants, like you said, rarely make mistakes in trades, and I think, you know, Nunez could be a good piece for them. But where do you stand on that?
Well, I think he was a fine pickup for them. You know, the Indians could have used him too, but they decided to, it looks like, to move Ramirez back in to third, and
mm-hmm.
they can use Davis more, and they picked up Brandon Guyer, but Nunez would have been a nice pickup for Korea. Anywhere he would have gone because of the versatility and all the things we already said, and you're getting him in his career season. You might make the case, well, why couldn't the Twins get a little bit more for Nunez? Why couldn't they get two pieces, Mejia and somebody else? I don't know what those conversations were like. Based on what Rob Antony told everyone yesterday, I wasn't there, but I've heard the breakdown. I've heard it. He sounded, it was eye-opening a bit that people just wouldn't budge. And the Twins, to their credit, it doesn't sound like they budged very much on what their standards were. It's not like they had a certain level of a package that they needed back for X player and then said, well, we'll just take 20% less. They held the line, and that's why it was just three deals instead of five or six
Was there a number that you think might have made sense for the Twins to retain Nunez in terms of like an extension or something? Or do you think it was just a situation where they needed to clear some room because you've got Polanco out of options next year? You've committed to Danny Santana for better or worse, and you still do have Eduardo Escobar. You got Nick Gordon, who's not too far away. What would it have ever made sense to you to maybe float him a 3-year offer, or is it just kind of like, yeah, the getting was good to get out on Eduardo Nunez for the Twins?
Well, I'm always interested in, I'm always surprised to find, as in the Kurt Suzuki situation, but Nunez to the point, before you trade anybody that you like currently, you would at least like to investigate what it would cost to retain them. I don't know on Nunez if they even poked around on that. I don't have a sense of that, but I don't gather that they did because, as an agent told me in the last few days, he said, well, who would even make that decision for the Twins right now? And that's, really it'd be a Dave St. Peter, Jim Pollard decision because they're the ones who are definitely going to be here next year. Rob Antony did all he could and really, I think, distinguished himself in this, and I'm sure we'll talk about this next deal, but to get Ricky Nolasco off the books, even if it cost them effectively $5.5 million of his remaining 17, so they ate roughly a third of what he had coming. I know the way the accounting works is that $4 million goes next year, but they're still paying Ricky this year, and the Angels are still paying Santiago this year. Plus, you factor in the $1 million buyout. They ate about a third of the Ricky money, and that's pretty wise, it looks like. Now, Alex Meyer, I suppose there's a 2% chance that he could blow up on him and get fixed out there, and then Twins fans forever will be saying, oh, they had Alex Meyer and they gave him away, a throw-in. I don't think that will happen.
So before we leapfrog to the deal that you teased, there was Fernando Abad going to Boston for Pat Light. Pat was number 9 prospect in the Baseball America midseason update, if I found the right thing. But a couple things here. He's had a little bit of tough time at with the Red Sox. He's made a couple separate appearances, not enough to really draw anything from. And not entirely different from when JT Chagua came up and actually faced the Red Sox, I might add. But is there any level of concern for you that this bad Boston bullpen didn't give Light more of a look and instead decided to flip him? I read the reports on him. High 90s fastball, good splitter. I think he's also got a slider. Command issues, as you're not always, but frequently going to see from guys that throw this hard. Does it surprise you that he couldn't, get a crack in this Red Sox bullpen that has been so embattled by injuries?
I don't know. They do need some help. But the Twins, in this case, having drafted him out of high school, similar to how they took Nick Birdie twice, they have a long history with him. They know the makeup. They know everything about him, and they've been watching him closely. And as Rob pointed out, they see him every spring, and they see him in every league because they're across the way. So it seems like Pat Light maybe has been nagging at them with his rise and his steady rise up the ladder, where they keep saying, "Man, why didn't we get him signed?" One of those kind of things. For Fernando Abad, based on where Fernando Abad was just a few days ago, which was having worked 9 times in 38 games with some back problems thrown in, the fact that they're able to get him out to the mound 3 straight days, and yeah, he lost the game in there, but he didn't walk the yard as he had been. And then he's out there playing catch on the 4th day, which was humorous.
That's right.
Trade him into a pennant
so
race.
Weird. It was so funny.
He's just off doing his thing. And I think Eddie told him, hey, get up there. We gotta get you to Boston. But that's about right. That's about right. It's an arm you can dream on. It's right there. It's on the doorstep. It's not a guy in A-ball. A very good parallel to Chagua, although I think it feels like Chagua is more advanced.
Well, the command is improved for him this year, too.
Yeah, so why not? That's not another pitch to contact guy. It's a guy who, you throw Chagua against the wall, you throw Pat Light against the wall, and the others that we all know down there at AA, et cetera. And if two of them come through in the next couple of years, you have a setup crew.
Yeah, if you told me by any measure that they'd get a top 10 prospect, whether it was MLB.com, ESPN.com, Baseball America, Baseball Reference, any top whatever from the Red Sox system, you know, any reputable publication, giving them a top 10 prospect for two good months and then two shaky months of a bod, I think you'd probably have to take that.
Oh, absolutely, and that's another point too. These rankings are not. It's every system obviously isn't equal. So to get a guy who's somewhere in the 9 to 14 range, I think MLB.com had dropped him to 14, in that range from the Red Sox, you know, that's like getting one of the top five guys from a lesser system. The Red Sox are so stacked.
Mm-hmm.
You could almost make deals with the Red Sox where you say, all right, this list here, we like this list from MLB.com or whatever, Baseball America. Just pick one of your top 18 guys and we'll take him. We don't care. Just take one of them. It doesn't even matter, really, because they are loaded and continue to be loaded and will be. So that's the kind of team you want. And the Giants also have a lot of talent. And then the Blue Jays are a team that have loaded up on talent, and that's why the Irvin to the Blue Jays possibility began to tantalize.
Sure.
Because if they could have cherry picked a few of those young right-handers and taken Hutchinson, who did go to the Pirates for Liriano, so he was the piece they were pushing out there.
For sure.
As I was tweeting yesterday afternoon, that that's where it was headed. So they were going to use him to get somebody like that. But I'm glad Irvin's still here because if all these kids do mesh together and continue to play 500 ball the rest of this season, people have forgotten 11 and 34 by the offseason, and I guarantee you that there will be publications and pundits out there saying, watch out for the Twins in 2017, because now they have Santiago in the middle of the rotation, and they have Hughes coming back, and they have Santana at the top, and they have a Barrios with confidence.
Gibson's pretty good lately.
Yes, Gibson's the back problems are behind him, and has been very solid. So those are upward trends.
Kinsler actually had a funny moment the other day. He walked into the clubhouse and saw Fernando Abad sitting at his locker, and he's, "You're still here?" It's kind of funny to see those two kind of trading barbs. And we'll talk about Kinsler a little bit as one of the guys who stayed, but we do have one trade still to recap. Were you stunned, shocked? What was your level of surprise that Rob Anthony was able to move Ricky Nolasco, who didn't speak to media after his last start, which I couldn't understand because it was a good start?
Yeah, that might have been an outflow of after his Boston start, where many, many things happened that night at the David Price game. And they just said, well, Ricky's like, well, do you need me? And we're like, no. So we just let him go because – and so then he thought maybe that was a scholarship. I don't worry about that much. But
sure.
It was not his favorite thing to do, but wasn't ours either. But, it's good. He gets to go back home. I'm just wondering where, no matter who's the next general manager is, if there is one, then they're going to have to find a spot somewhere outside Target Field for that Rob Anthony statue.
Because
he moved Ricky.
He did.
He moved Ricky, and they've only been trying to do it for 2 years. So, he still has a 5+ ERA, and he still has that injury history the last 2 years. And the fact that Ricky has had to start dropping down in recent starts a lot to trick people, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but he's about to be, if you thought he was a junk baller before, I mean, he's about to be total invent on the fly kind of guy. He's searching. So Hector Santiago is not, he's regressed this year. He's not at the form he was in the first half of 2015, but if he's healthy and of course he's walking too many people, it's a concern. Last year was the home runs, this year is the walks. But that's a pretty good resume and pretty good, and he's 28, so younger. He is going to get a bump in arbitration, but all told, like I said, if it all washes out that you had to eat a third of Ricky and still come away. Because I thought all along that I could see a scenario as you got toward midseason here where they would just pay the rest of Ricky this year And from yesterday forward, it was about 4.1. And so that's not uncommon. Pay the rest of Ricky this year, and then you might just get maybe just Buchnevich back. You wouldn't get or even someone lesser. You wouldn't necessarily get anything of any value. So for them to get something of value, even though it's going to get a big arbitration bump, fifth-year arbitration bumps are pretty substantial because they can compare against all free agents as well as those with five-plus years of service time. That's pretty good work.
Yeah, I feel like they got the anti-Ricky Nolasco in Santiago. Nolasco's been a FIP underachiever, you know, a guy that consistently career 4.58 ERA, career FIP 3.85. He flips the script to Santiago, and you got a guy who's got a career ERA of 3.68 with a 4.63 FIP. So I think at some point, you know, with Santiago over the last 4 years, you're coming up on about 600 innings. At some point, a guy can just consistently beat that mark, whether it's through sheer will or devil magic or something or other, or maybe just being a left-hander who throws a freaking screwball. But I think that this is a good move. You know, again, and maybe it'll be a thing where he might struggle in front of a different defense. You know, he's played for the Angels for 3 years, and then he was with the White Sox before that. But you've got a guy over the last 4 years with a 3.75 ERA that is better than Justin Verlander in that time frame. Now, again, lots of caveats. Verlander's thrown 130 more innings, so you can't take that away from him. But when Santiago's been on the mound, he's been pretty darn good.
Yeah, and he's faced the Twins a lot over the years, and he's done fine against them. So they're familiar with how he competes and what he's like when he's at his best, what he's like when he's poor, and the makeup piece is very good. He's supposedly really good in the clubhouse.
He follows everybody, just like Irvin Santana on Twitter.
There you go. So or Irvin's people. But
there you go.
I think again to move what Ricky was at this stage of his career with that amount of money left on the deal, and again, just a constant reminder. Both Ricky and when you think about it, the Ricky deal, to put Ricky and Alex Meyer in the same deal, even if you got nothing back but some salary relief.
Mm-hmm.
In the wake of Terry Ryan's firing, those are, if you're going to make a list of Terry's five biggest mistakes down the stretch, that's probably one and 1A, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a span deal for Meyer straight up. It never worked out the way they envisioned. And Nolasco at the time was the most the Twins had ever given to an outside free agent. It bit them from the minute he got there. So
it's true.
I'm trying to think who the third piece you could have put in there to just really make yourself feel. You could put Phil Hughes in there too, but I don't view Phil as a total failure because he's given a one great year and then he's been hurt a lot since and he still has 3 years to redeem himself. It was the extension really that people will question if he can't reclaim what he was in 14, but Ricky and Meyer together, that's the despair combo and the Terry Ryan just mistake combo that goes out the door in one swoop and suddenly the room's a little brighter, right?
How
you got to look at it.
What do you make of Rob acquiring big league talent or advanced players? I believe Buchnevich is the only player that wasn't either AAA or big leagues, and I believe he was at AA. Actually, no, I think he pitched a little AAA, and the results weren't great. But what do you make of advanced players coming back in these deals?
I think that's wise.
I agree.
I mean, you're going to get a higher ceiling with the A-ball guy, and I do know the Twins were scouting Gulf Coast League even with some trade in mind. I mean, you could really have gotten some, you go to Gulf Coast or rookie level, you could get some high-end piece. You might have to wait before you can reveal who it is, as Trey Turner had happened with Washington and others. But they chose to go this way because they're really not that far away. Rob did say something, and you guys will talk about in your next segment, I guess, but I was a little surprised to hear Rob say in this gathering yesterday that the Twins don't know when they'll be ready to contend again. because up to that point he had been saying, I asked him directly on the day Terry was fired, and he'd been asked again recently at Target Field, do you think this team can compete in 2017? And he said, yes, we think we can. But then he said the kind of people they were sending off was due to not knowing whether, you know, when they would be able to contend again. Well, Santiago's only under contract through arbitration through next year, under one more year of control. So, mm-hmm. And like you say, Pat Light is on the 40-man. And these other pieces, these guys are here now. Mejia is going to, I have to think you're going to see Mejia up here in the rotation over the last, certainly in September.
Yeah, got a good chance.
These guys will all be pushing, and there'll be some more off-season jockeying to maximize these for whoever's decision it is to maximize this now rotation depth that they think they have. I wrote about it a couple weeks ago, and it remains question A for whoever is in charge, whoever has the keys to the baseball operations going into the offseason. Are the Twins gunning for 2017, or are they just looking to keep their heads above water and keep matriculating the ball down the field, but really eyeing 2018? Because what's 2018? That's the year after the Royals window has closed. That's when that's after the Royal exodus. You might even be able to pick off a couple of those guys.
Kane
really
and Hosmer and Moustakas.
Yeah.
If you want to spend, you can go get some Royals possibly after 2017.
Yep.
Mauer
deal is real close to being done at that point.
Yes, so the real jump forward, if you are a fatalist, a Mauer career fatalist, the real jump forward would be 2019, because that's when you're free at last. But
it's true though.
It's and there's other, if Perkins would come off the books after next year. That's if it works out that way.
The only wrinkle there is that that's when Buxton, if he pans out, gets more expensive, and Sano as well. But you take the good with the bad.
Well, you can also talk about service time. And
sure.
Sano last year basically had half a season of service time. And if you are to send him out for 3 weeks or so coming up here, it adds up. I don't think he'll be in the minors again. There could be some small benefit to that over time if you want to buy yourself an extra year and clear his head in the short term. So, and Buxton, he too could go back down before returning in September. There's a chance that Ari could end up on a DL because mm-hmm. right now they're optimistic. But I asked Byron when we talked to him after the game last night if he was satisfied with now at least two MRIs on his knee showing just a bone bruise, and yet he was feeling what he described as like a balloon popping behind his knee.
Ooh,
just while running. Well, if that happens to me, that's understandable, right? I'm 48, I'm a sports writer.
Yeah.
If it happens to an elite athlete whose legs are such an important part of his game, I'm thinking I want a second and third opinion. I want to know absolutely, positively, that it's just a bone bruise. And if it is, and this sort of thing happens to me while opening it up into full speed, should I be out there?
Right.
I would have to wonder about that too.
Especially with the team struggling the way it is, and his long-term future being more important than that. I got a couple quick things. Of the guys who weren't traded, who was the most surprising to you?
Suzuki. Because they have made no effort to even talk about what it would cost to retain him as John Ryan Murphy continues struggling in AAA. And I think what happened there is the Lucroy saga just dragged on so long, and other teams that might have had interest in Suzuki certainly weren't going to move until they knew if they could get Lucroy.
Right.
And it took the Rangers so long to get in there and get him. And then the Indians always were kind of like, well, we have enough here, we can get by. We don't need, it's Lucroy or bust, basically, and that's why they let Lucroy walk. But there are other teams looking for catching help, and I was surprised that that Suzuki made it through. I think Molitor even sounded a little surprised, as he admitted his name is out there a lot. And you're not going to get two better offensive months out of Kurt Suzuki in his entire career than we've just seen. It's unbelievable. And as Brandon and I have written, the axe bat is pretty – it's a big part of the story, but it can't be the whole story, because if that were the case, then everybody would have an axe bat and everybody would be slugging 500 or whatever it is. So he was at peak value for a guy who may not, by the way, may not even play next year. He's, you know, he talked to me in Detroit about how he's now pretty much day to day with his plans for the future.
Oh, wow.
Because it didn't get much attention, but he was pretty obvious. He was pretty open about how he's got three kids and he's moving into his mid-30s.
Including a brand new kid, I might add.
Yeah, brand new kid. He has taken a lot of abuse, probably as much, if not more, abuse. And because he's a smaller guy, tough as nails, but we have no idea how many of those mini concussions he's had that he never even missed a game with, or even came out of the game with. If I were his relative, I would say you better really think long and hard about how long you want to do this, because, there's other things. He's got his whole life to live. But if he wants to keep playing, the Twins would be wise, I still think, if he can continue to show signs of these kinds of signs of life at the plate the rest of the year, or just be an average catcher. The bar is set very low for a major league catcher offensively in 2016. It's a 1 year deal at $3 or $4 million, then have to be six, would be wise as insurance, because if you think he'll hold up, because Mick, I am curious to see Mitch Garver come up here. He's really just raking
at
Chattanooga, and I saw him in the fall league, but I've watched him for a few years. Gotten to know him. He's a really smart guy, later bloomer. Really has worked hard on his defense. He's not a butcher. He can block balls better than you think. He can throw better than you think. And I think we've all kind of underrated him along the way. He always figured the bat would end up to a position switch at some point. But no, they've kept him back there, and I think they're going to give him a chance to show late in the year. It'll be similar to Pinto a few years ago when he came up, and it's a guy who there'll be questions throughout his career about his ability to stay behind the plate, but he can hit.
I had a question from a usual suspect, and I'm sure you'd probably recognize the name, but waiting for me this morning on Facebook: what does this deadline do for Rob Anthony's chances of keeping the job? And frankly, the fact for me, and I want you to give your opinion before we let you go, the fact that they got and retained the search firm kind of means it's unwavering, the amount of faith they have in Rob. It's just a matter of the fact that he'll be thrown into the candidate pool at the end of the year. And again, it's Rob against the pool. And so if they interview 30 candidates, by rule or by general math, he's going to be up against it to retain the job. Do you think this deadline has changed anything in that respect?
It hasn't hurt him.
I can't see how
it would have hurt him, because although he could have gotten, you would think he could have gotten some pieces for Suzuki and Kinsler and others, he could have perhaps put together a blockbuster for Santana. We don't know, as I've said before, we don't know what kind of deals Rob was able to, potential deals Rob was able to put on Dave St. Peter's desk and Jim Pollard's desk and say, I have come to a tentative agreement on X, and we could do this, or we have proposed this. I mean, I'm sure they were getting blow by blow, or at least daily summations, and that's the advantage that Rob Anthony had in this process, and we'll have, and he's got August to do some more of this, over any other outside candidate. He's a known quantity. There's comfort level. He's a workhorse in every role. They've seen that. He's smart. He's creative, and great personality. He knows how to handle every aspect of that. So the only negative, and it's incredible that it would be considered a negative, but two negatives doesn't come from a true scouting or baseball background. It worked its way up you know, through the PR office, but negotiates contracts with the best of them and arbitration guy and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other, you know, the link to Terry and the fact that he is very much, even though he's his own man, he was groomed by Terry Ryan as his right-hand man all these years, and so many of the things that he must believe about the game will have, you know, Terry's tinge to them. And if you're going to fire Terry Ryan in the middle of a season, it would, again, in the end, be odd to it would appear odd to a frustrated fan base to then elevate his right-hand man, but or any of his other top lieutenants, as much as I consider make the case for Mike Radcliffe or Wayne Krzyzewski or Darren Johnson, on and on. The way it went down, it wasn't an off-season step aside and elevation. It was a firing. That's a lot for Rupp or any of the other candidates in-house to overcome.
Yeah, I agree. When you also teased a couple weeks ago the fact that, you know, the team looking at the stands being mostly or more empty than ever before, and that maybe being a driving force, you have to work the public's sensibilities here, and in doing so, probably does hurt Rob's chances quite a bit. Mike, I really appreciate you coming on with us. We'll talk to you again in a couple weeks. How does that sound?
That'll be great. Thank you, guys.
All right, enjoy Cleveland. Thanks for coming on.
All right, see you.
You bet. I tell you, Tom, I learn more when we have him on than I think I do just any other baseball experience I have outside of when we used to get to talk to Terry Ryan at Target Field. But I really appreciate Mike coming on with us, and great stuff as always. Appreciate that, and we'll have him on here, I think, again in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So you took in the Rob Anthony presser yesterday. You said it was pretty sparsely attended, or was there just no Pioneer Press there? I mean, what was the situation?
I didn't see the Pioneer Press, but not many people. I mean, the team's in Cleveland. You have a lot of the beat writers already kind of working out there.
So not entirely unlike when Terry was fired.
Yeah, it was. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get out there because I believe you were back home and I was in Oakdale.
Right. kind of a weird vibe. But
yeah.
I this time I texted you when I knew about it early enough to make that transfer.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, it was kind of an interesting vibe in the just around all this. I mean, I guess you got very straight answers because there wasn't kind of a media horde, but you also have like a lot of cameramen asking questions, and that's fine. But
I know exactly what you're getting after here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. It was nice, especially for someone like me who's usually overshadowed, obviously, by the big guns out there. I was able to kind of get into certain things with him. He also talked with me, Lavelle, Derek Wetmore from 1500, a handful of other people afterwards, just off the record, kind of clarifying some loose ends. For example, they weren't that close to getting Light, for example, when they drafted him, I think, 20th round in, like, 09 or whatever.
They probably never seriously considered.
Yeah, because he ended up going to college in nearby New Jersey. And
yeah, that's a tough sell.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to stay home, they want to stay home.
Yeah, and then he was smart. He ended up getting drafted in the compensation round in 2012, so first-round pick, technically.
Yeah, a little extra cash there.
Yeah, exactly. So, but no, and he said the Lucra deal did throw things off. He didn't specifically mention Suzuki, but I think we can kind of add, you know,
connect the dots
a little bit. And, I mean, generally it was professional. I don't think just because Terry Ryan met with the media every day that he has to. He's been available when he needs to be, when Nunez is traded at the trade deadline at various points. I think that he should check in with the media, and whoever the next guy is should check in the media with the media every once in a while just to communicate with the masses of what's going on behind the scenes.
It won't be make or break for how good that person is at their job, whether it's Rob Anthony or someone from the outside, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
So did he say anything about how active he suspects he'll be in August? Did he give any kind of indication of what the situation might be there?
Sorry, run that by him again. We're running up against clock here.
We'll wrap it with this.
Yeah.
Did he give any kind of indication about August and what kind of activity they'll have on the waiver deadline?
I think Plouffe probably is a candidate for that. Again, he didn't come out and say that, but he said we'll explore options. I mean, I suppose Suzuki, the problem with that is you're not necessarily trading with maybe the team you'd want to because you have to go through the waiver wire.
Unless he clears.
Yeah.
And then you can
flip
him to whatever team will give you something that's not on the 40-man or has also cleared or been claimed by the Twins.
Yeah.
Lots of layers to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, guys like I mentioned Vargas, or if they try to, you know, dangle Park, or
I think Kinsler could be an option.
Kinsler's actually a good one. But I think a lot of those guys will be in the off season where you can maybe all the dust is settled and you can sit down and say, let's work this out.
And if they move Kinsler, they might get that lower end, not lower end, but lower level talent that they didn't get in these trades like we talked with Mike. But anyway, that's a wrap for Midwest Swing this time around. Next week, we're still working on a guest, but we do have Mike Berardino locked in for a couple weeks from now.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. This is Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.